two of a kind, so sister, I'm keeping my eyes on you. I bet you think I don't know nothing but singing the blues. Oh, sister, have I got news for you? I'm something. I hope you think that you're something too.
So shake your shimmy, sister, 'cause honey, this sugar is feeling fine.
Good afternoon, listeners. This is the Women, Body, and Soul program on 99.5 FM, WBAI, Pacifica Radio in New York City. I'm your host, Natalie Tandiwe. My guest today is journalist and author Joy Jones, who is with us to dialogue on her Washington Post article titled "Marriage is for White People," printed in the Post March 26, 2006. Now, we've all heard shows or read articles about the declining and low rates of marriage in the Black community. But one of the things that was so striking to me about this article is its muses, African-American sixth-grade boys in a career exploration class that Miss Jones was teaching. Joy was pleased to hear the 12-year-old boys say that being a good father was very important to them, more meaningful than money or fancy job titles. Joy offered to have some couples come speak to the class about being married and rearing children. Another young boy kindly declined her offer on behalf of the class, saying, "Oh no, we're not interested in the part about marriage, only about how to be good fathers." And that's when yet another sixth-grade boy let her know what time it is, saying, "Marriage is for white people," as if the words left a nasty taste in his mouth, according to Miss Jones. Well, her article points out that he's right. Statistically speaking, marriage does appear to be for white people. During the past 30-plus years, marriage rates for Blacks have fallen 34%. As of the 2001 census, 43% of Black women and 41% of Black men had never been married, compared to 27 and 20% respectively for white women and men. Overall, African-American women are the least likely in our society to marry, according to statistics. Today, we'll discuss why African-Americans are not marrying, how it's affecting our lives, and what it means if Black children believe that marriage is for white people. Joy Jones, author of the Washington Post article, "Marriage is for White People," is an educator and writer. She's author of the acclaimed children's book, Tambourine Moon, the books Between Black Women, Listening with a Third Ear, and the book Private Lessons, a book of meditations for teachers. You can learn more about Miss Jones and her work at her website, www.joyjonesonline.com. Welcome, Joy. Thank you for joining us on the air today.
Hi, Natalie. I'm looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah, so what an article. I know it generated a lot of buzz when it was published. I think I actually was sent your article from the Post website itself by a girlfriend, and I know it definitely got me and my friends talking. Can you tell us what kind of responses you've gotten about the article?
Oh, I got hundreds and hundreds of emails, well over 1,000 emails.
Oh, my goodness.
From Blacks, whites, and other ethnicities, and even people from around the world.
Uh-huh.
Because marriage is such an emotional and important topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think in many cases people have realized that not just for African Americans, but for Americans in general, marriage is on the decline.
Right. You know, that's definitely something I want to talk about. So what was the most surprising email or response that you got?
Several surprises. One, I got a lot of mail from men, slightly more men than women, but not that many responses from married women.
Oh.
So that was interesting to me.
Well, they're so busy.
Yes, they're so busy juggling everything that they couldn't sit down and write a letter.
Right.
Many men, I was happy to hear, were interested in knowing what they could do, mostly among single men. They were interested in knowing what they could do so they wouldn't be a statistic, and how they could have a sustainable marriage. So that was encouraging. Quite a few men, this was interesting to me, quite a few men have written to tell me, "You women always go for the fast-talking, thug life, good-looking, trash-talking boys, and you leave the square Boy Scouts alone." precisely the men who would make good husband material.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about that again a little bit later, about what makes good partner material for men and for women.
Well, the brothers are saying, sisters, that you overlook the guy with the big Coke bottle eyeglasses and who has a book under his arm as opposed to being plugged into his iPod and who doesn't have the fancy words to catch your ear. Those guys are staying home on Friday and Saturday nights, so they tell me.
Well, women are missing out. I love geeks, so y'all are missing out.
Well, that's the report from the men.
Well, to tell you the truth, one of the things about the article that stood out for me is that I could actually identify with the sentiments that the young boys in your class were expressing. I remember when I was in my 20s, every week there would be this water cooler talk on Monday among my white coworkers about all the weddings they'd attended the weekend before, the ones they were going to the week ahead, how much it was costing them. And I would always like nod and smile like I knew what they were talking about. I had no idea. No one I knew got married or was getting married. And this went on for years. My friends are well-educated African-Americans who've graduated from college. They were pursuing careers, they were getting graduate degrees, and they were definitely dating, but not one of them was getting married. And one day in my late 20s, I finally got a wedding invitation in the mail. And it was from my friend Mike, who had actually been trying to get married for a few years. And he'd found this nice West Indian girl who apparently hadn't gotten the memo that we don't get married. And so she agreed to do this. But that was over 6 years ago. And since then, only two other couples in my circle of friends have gotten married. So like the boys in your article, my world was also quietly and emphatically illustrating for me that, yeah, maybe marriage really is for white people. And I would bring this up to friends. I said, did you ever notice that we don't go to weddings? And they would say, well, I never thought about it, but yeah, it's true. So has anyone else said that to you? Any other adults said that to you?
Well, I'm a little bit older than you, Natalie, so I hear more about the divorces than the weddings.
See, my friends can't get to the altar.
Although I have to say that a month ago, my own sister announced that she was getting married.
Uh-huh.
Her friend popped the question and bought a bling-bling ring.
Oh, I like those. Yeah.
So she's making me a liar in my own household, I suppose.
Oh.
But I go to weddings. And I also hear the aftermath of the divorces.
Right.
Not a whole lot of weddings, now that you bring it to my attention.
Mm-hmm.
But I know married couples who are struggling.
Right. Yeah, so. I think we all hear about, whether or not they're married, we all hear about couples who are struggling. And I think that one of the things that is important to point out is that there is an overall decline in marriage rates. But I think that there are still some differences. I mean, in the past, white people, particularly those of middle-class status and above, have been very compelled to stay married by social status and economics. And, you know, when you're stigmatized for being divorced and there are assets at stake or an ability to make a living at stake if there's a divorce, these are circumstances that whites have been more likely to face than blacks historically, and these are circumstances that compel you to stay married.
Yes.
So if we look at the sort of some of the history around why there have been, well, some of the history around perhaps why there have been higher marriage rates among whites. But now that divorce is more commonplace and there's less stigma, and also many white women have post-secondary degrees, rising incomes, we see among white people declining rates of marriage and higher divorce rates, but there's still nothing near the low rates of marriage among black folks. So, you know, what do you think is going on there?
Well, I think it's the same syndrome in many respects, but just a matter of degree. Black women have always had a high rate of labor force participation.
Right.
Actually, you know, that's why we were brought to this country to work.
Right.
So even though we may not command high salaries, we are accustomed to the idea of working and attempting self-sufficiency.
Right.
And over the last 30 years with the women's movement, as women have been able to earn a breadwinner's wage and as the stigma on divorce or singlehood has been lessened,
mm-hmm.
many women who find themselves in untenable situations or who might have married just for the social status or for the bump up in economics
right.
have said, well, you know, given what I might have to tolerate in order to be married, maybe I'll just remain single or get that divorce.
Right, and I think that we're seeing that among women of all races. I think women's roles have changed so much in the past, 50 to 100 years, but their views on marriage and their expectations of marriage have really changed greatly in the last 40 years. And I think that men's roles and expectations regarding marriage haven't really changed at all.
Exactly. So there is a disconnect. One of the letters that I received was a woman who said that when she was in graduate school, this was an African-American woman writing, her male peers told her, and she, according to her, this was the general sentiment, one or two.
I'm afraid to hear it.
That they didn't want to marry another woman in grad school like her. They wanted a wife who had these qualities, sex, food, and silence.
Sex,
that's what they wanted out of marriage.
Food and silence.
And the average woman probably is looking for a different kind of role in a marriage. So what at least those men were looking for, sex, food, and silence, and what the typical well-educated woman wants to bring to the table and wants to receive, I don't think that's a good match.
Right, and I think that that I don't know what we call that, sex, food, and silence, that triangle is something that I think, although most men won't come out and say it, I think that that's something that has been an expectation and a traditional expectation and desire on the part of men in marriage for a very long time. And although many men have modernized on the surface, that at the core there are still some very traditional desires going on. And I think that both black women and white women sort of complain or are resistant to the idea of just getting married for the sake of getting married because of these big differences, these sort of gaps in what people are interested in. I remember one thing we were talking about is the article in Essence that was just published about, was it the African-American men going to Rio in Brazil and hooking up with prostitutes there and reporting that part of why they liked the experience so much is this sex, food, and silence trio that they felt that they were getting from the women there. And I think that goes to show, I mean, these are men who are also dating women here who have degrees and careers. And so they're also dealing with these women, but there's this desire for this much more traditional kind of arrangement with women.
And I think, not to demonize the brothers too much, I think on the woman's side of the equation, one thing we do have to think about is it's one thing to say what you want, but you also have to be mindful about what the other person wants.
Right.
And I have also heard men talk about how nurtured and cared for they feel when a woman cooks a meal at home for him. And I'm guilty of this. The typical woman, she's so busy, she doesn't want to come home and stand over a hot stove after working all day. But if a woman is interested in enhancing her relationship, she might make that sacrifice to come home and prepare a home-cooked meal.
I know my partner is listening. He's going to give me a hard time about that later. That's like probably one of
Natalie, he paid me to make that comment.
I know he did. I know he looked on the caller ID and found your number. Because that's a big thing in our home. A lot of times I'm just really tired, and he always looks at me with these puppy eyes. So are you cooking? When's that going to happen again?
A lot of men have told me that women make sacrifices in order to go to school, so they come home tired and do homework. Or they make sacrifices on behalf of the job. They're tired, but they'll do the extra hour or two of overtime, but they won't make that similar sacrifice for their man.
Let's switch topics. on a kind of related point, I think something that you raised in your article is that there's this actual age gap also between black women and men around when they're actually interested in and motivated to get married. You talk about black women being very motivated about this in their 20s and early 30s, and then kind of the motivation fades as no one appears.
Well, that has been my journey. Very much wanting to get married when I was in my 20s. A lot of times men were more interested in playing the field and having fun and or maybe interested in a serious relationship but not quite ready to get married. So time passes and I, you know, buy a condo.
The condo.
Establish a routine that I enjoy or get set in my ways.
A routine.
and enjoy my life. That has been a surprise. 10 years ago, if someone told me I would still be single today, I would have been depressed.
Right.
But today, I'm enjoying a really delightful life, very satisfied in many, many ways. And then now that men have sort of gotten all their running out of them, they are more mature and can see the benefits of settling down and being stable, and are now looking for a wife. And then when they approach me, You know, I'm not running a reentry program.
Oh, Lord.
Things are really good. I don't want to upset that.
Right.
Life is cool and quiet. I don't want drama. And so you weigh things a little bit more circumspectly as you age.
Mm-hmm.
You're not as quick to make changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But that has certainly been the way the path has unfolded for me.
Well, and I think that's happening for younger women as well. They're saying, well, in order for me to get married, and I think men are doing this too, quite frankly, they're saying that in order for me to sign up for marriage and all that comes with it, I have to be very compelled. And I think that a lot of people aren't all that compelled by the partnership or the dating material that they meet. So they're saying, well, I can date you, but I'm not necessarily going to sign up for the whole package. Because I think people have a much more clear understanding of how complicated it is to divorce someone in terms of assets, or particularly if you have children, how much it complicates your life and your children's lives. So I think everyone has gotten a little gun-shy when it comes to this on all ends of the spectrum. But one thing I've always wondered is, why don't younger women sort of look at dating older men and trying to cultivate marital partners among older men instead of looking at men who are their age and really might not be interested or ready in getting married, no matter how fantastic the person is that they're dealing with?
Well, traditionally, older men and younger women, that's not a new combination.
Right.
Maybe that's something young women need to take a closer look at.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for older men, and I think particularly recycled men who have... No, seriously. Because, well, I have one friend who says, you know, if you meet a man over, you know, his late 40s and he's never been married, he doesn't want to ever be married. I don't know if that's true or not. But I think particularly older men who have been married before and who've sort of been around, you know, this cycle once and are still interested in getting married make great partners, because they've hopefully learned some lessons that first time around.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're still hopeful or interested, I don't know if it's hope or just foolishness, you know, definitely says something in terms of their willingness to put the work in that needs to be done to sustain this kind of relationship.
One thing that could be an obstacle, perhaps men who have already been married and raised a family
mm-hmm.
are not interested in rearing children again.
Right. I mean, it's going to be on a case-by-case basis. So obviously, you know, you can't make any blanket assumptions about an older man. And then there's also the question of how much older. So, yeah, I think all those things are things you have to consider as you evaluate people. You know, and I think that something else that is important to look at when we look at our community and we sort of criticize this idea that, or challenge this idea that marriage isn't valued, is looking at those external forces that impact the degree to which marriage is even appealing or likely for Black Americans. I think, you know, we have higher rates of incomplete education, an education gap between Black men and women, with Black women having more education. We have higher rates of unemployment and poverty, particularly among Black men. Large numbers of births from previous unions that have dissolved, which have left many men and women single with children. And together, I think this is a real anti-marriage stew. I mean, it's not necessarily an appealing package to everyone. And I think that this is something that we face more often than our white peers, you know, in their 20s and 30s and 40s who are looking to get married. Kind of what we're looking at marrying might not be all that appealing in the bigger scope of the world.
Well, it's not a new problem, and as I mentioned earlier, it's not a problem that's isolated to African Americans, although we have it in greater numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I recently came across an Ebony magazine from February 1959, and the article was about in Washington, D.C., there were lots of women, Black women, or Negro girls, as the article stated,
mm-hmm.
who, Negro bachelorettes, I think was the term they used.
Oh, I like that.
Who were single, attractive, had nice apartments and cars, but no eligible men to marry.
Mm-hmm.
And that was February 1959.
Wow.
So in some ways, things have not changed, or rather, they've changed for the worse
mm-hmm.
in the same direction. And in a more contemporary frame, I've seen several news articles about how white men who have a high school diploma
mm-hmm.
but no advanced degrees or no big-time jobs, they're having a hard time finding wives
mm-hmm.
because women who are their blue-collar equivalents are looking towards, would prefer to marry someone who's college-age educated and a better breadwinner.
Is it really that easy to marry up?
Well, I think traditionally, women do marry up.
Mm-hmm.
And men, you know, you have the boss who marries his secretary, but you mm-hmm. seldom see, if the boss is a woman, you seldom see her marry her assistant.
Mm-hmm.
So women frequently seek to marry up, and men don't mind marrying the secretary or mm-hmm. the woman who has fewer resources than he does. In fact, that in some cases makes the marriage a little bit more stable.
Yeah, you know, I've heard interesting things about that. I remember I had a friend whose partner, she and her partner broke up, and one of his complaints was, you know, they're both very well educated, and one of his complaints was he felt that perhaps he would be better suited or more compatible with a woman who had less education and less drive and was less focused on her career and could focus on him more.
Exactly.
And so they did break up, and he started pursuing and dating women who fit that description. And so, you know, they're still friends, and they would talk here and there. And so she asked him, you know, how's that going with the people that you're pursuing now? And he said, well, to be honest with you, it's not quite what I thought it would be.
Mm.
And he talked about the fact that he was so excited about the idea that these women would have this time for him and lavish this attention on him and also not be smarter than him, quite
mm-hmm.
frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that the reality of dealing with women who weren't necessarily well-educated, weren't that bright, and weren't thinking for themselves was actually much more draining than he had anticipated.
Interesting.
And that he really couldn't envision them being the mother of his children when he thought about the fact that, you know, your child's life is shaped by their mother, as their mother spend the majority of time with them. And, you know, it has to be the mother often who is driving a child forward through the education system and, you know, advocating for them and all those things. And he felt horrified by the idea of having any of these women have that role for his child. And so, you know, in his words, it wasn't quite what he thought it was going to be.
Mm, so, as so much of life and love is.
Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to point out with white Americans is that we often talk about how so few black men go to college, but
mm-hmm.
each year fewer white males attend college.
Mm-hmm.
Women are dominating the campuses,
mm-hmm.
both black women and white women.
And are there any particular theories or an understanding of why there's this decline overall?
There's a professor by the name of Andrew Hacker who has written several books on popular culture and trends.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he suggests is that the presence of women moving into so many spheres
mm-hmm.
Evokes a certain degree of anxiety and perhaps even resentment
mm-hmm.
among men. And men are not necessarily always comfortable
mm-hmm.
Competing head-to-head with women. And so one way to avoid that is just to opt out.
Hmm. Yes, I guess that's one strategy. You know, the other thing I've heard that's interesting, I'll have to think about that some more. The other thing I've heard is that, you know, and I saw this in your article, a lot of women were saying, black women were saying, I looked, I didn't find him, and now they've moved on to something else. I've even had some female friends tell me that they've made the choice to find a female partner after weighing their options on the partnership and marriage landscape. I've had two black women and one white woman tell me this, none of them who were historically lesbian or gay, and they just said, you know, there was a point at which they were ready for this partnership and there weren't men who were really, you know, coming across as appealing, good long-term partners, and that this was the choice that they made for themselves. And I was surprised, one, because they hadn't historically been gay. And I thought, God, is this an actual trend or just an anomaly that I have met three people across races who are saying this to me? And I was wondering if you heard any of that in your feedback on the article.
No, I have not heard any of that feedback. I have heard women say they were going to be open to dating men of other races.
Right.
But no, I have not heard any women say that they would choose a lesbian relationship since they couldn't find a man.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, another thing that I found kind of startling and disturbing when I read your article was the findings of the sociologist Andrew Cherlin. I'm not sure if I said his name correctly.
Yes, from Johns Hopkins.
Mm-hmm. That a black child was more likely to grow up living with both parents during slavery than he or she is today.
When I first read that, I nearly fell out my chair.
Let me repeat it in case anyone didn't understand. A black child was more likely to grow up living with both parents during slavery than he or she is today in 2006.
Now, anecdotally, I knew that divorce and single parenthood was on the rise. My own parents have been married over 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally I've had conversations where I said, someday I think I'll go and visit my mom and dad. And someone will say, where does your mother live? And I'll say, on Webster Street. And they say, well, where does your father live? And I'll say, in the same house. And people are like, oh, your parents live together. So, you know, anecdotally, I knew, you know, that things were changing or had changed.
Right.
But to have it stated like that, that's it takes your breath away.
Yeah, it does. And you have to think about it very carefully, because it means that despite, or actually because of, being subject against their will to a very sadistic and exploitive socioeconomic system, Black men and women were actually more successful in establishing working relationships and families during enslavement than they are now. And you would think to yourself, dynamics can't get more anti-marriage than slavery. Yet somehow we are less willing or able to couple now than when we faced enslavement. What in the world does that mean?
Well, I think several things are in play. Slavery, your options are limited. And I think society in general, in many respects, until recent years, your options were contained.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it was social stigma or the rule of the plantation,
right?
Whether you're Black or white, your option for leaving a marriage was sharply curtailed
mm-hmm.
in years past, which is no longer true. So some people stayed together not because they had healthy partnerships, but
right.
because they didn't have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to keep things in perspective. Secondly, is the economic thing.
Right.
In many cases, it was to a slave master's economic benefit to keep a family unit together, because if you have happy workers,
producing.
You have more productive workers.
Right.
In contrast to modern America, a person who is a single entity in the workforce may be more valuable to the employer than someone who has ties to family.
For because example, they don't need to go home at 5.
Exactly. A single person can work all day and put in some hours in the evening if
mm-hmm.
he or she does not have to go home to cook, clean, or tend to a partner or some children. Or in the case where you have a single mother who's working, she really needs her job because she feels more vulnerable.
Right.
She's likely to feel more at the mercy of economic forces. So she'll do whatever is necessary to keep the job. Just today on the Today Show,
mm-hmm.
a study was cited that said more Americans are working longer hours but not getting the bump up in pay that you would think would accompany that.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason for that drive is people think, I'm glad to have a job. Let me do what I can do to keep it.
God, it's getting so scary. All right, we're going to take a little break here. Listeners, we're talking with author Joy Jones about the Washington Post article, Marriages for White People. This is the Women, Body, and Soul program, 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York City, Pacifica Radio, and I'm your host, Natalie Tondiway.
I'm so in love. Right with me, 'cause you make me feel so brand new. I want to spend my life with you. They say it seems a baby since we've been together. Ooh, loving you forever is what I need. Let me be the one you come running to. Let's stay together, loving you whether times are good or bad or happy.
Listeners, this is the Women, Body, and Soul program, 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York City, Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Natalie Tandiwe, and today we're talking with author Joy Jones about her Washington Post article, Marriage is for White People. How you doing, Joy?
I'm doing good. I want to let your listeners know I also have a book on relationships called Between Black Women, Listening with the Third Ear.
Which, if I may say so, is an absolutely fantastic book, and I will actually have Joy back on the air just to talk about her book. It's a very important book. That'll be the cliffhanger. You guys should all go look it up on Amazon or on Joy's website, but it's certainly worthy of its own show. It's that good. One of the things I want to talk about, I want to talk about a couple more things. I do want to talk about what our marriage rates mean for families with children.
Yes.
But I also want to talk about the idea, or is marriage as we know it still even important or actually sustainable?
Oh, I think marriage is important. I do think we need to find ways to strengthen and sweeten marriage. Communities that have married couples have lower crimes than communities where there's a low incidence of marriage. Nearly every study shows that marriage enhances the well-being of children.
Mm-hmm.
That's still the best environment.
And men.
And for men in particular. Also for women, although it's much more dramatically a benefit for men than for women.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to build wealth if you are married as opposed to being single. So there are some values that marriage brings to the society.
Mm-hmm.
That need to be preserved and promoted.
Mm-hmm. But I think at the same time, marriage is losing some of its psychological appeal. I think that we also have to question the value of the marriage as we know it in terms of the Judeo-Christian concept of monogamous marriage. This has not changed in, you know, thousands of years. It's an institution based on viewing women or wives as property and men and husbands as property owners. It's based on alliances for social status and the needs of families of the bride and groom. And I think that although obviously we've done different things with marriage over time, at the same time we haven't done a lot different with marriage over time. And people get married and marriages, the institutions that they step into, can't be sustained. And if you look at the divorce rate, I think you have to look back at what marriage is itself and ask, does this work and how could it work better?
And I think we are wrestling and sometimes losing the fight in terms of redefining. As we mentioned earlier, women have changed a lot.
Right.
Men haven't changed quite as much. And so we need to find some ways to rebalance that equation so that men can get what they want and need and women can have what they want and need.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think the women's movement has done a lot to change women's consciousness and thinking. 3/4 of all divorces in the United States are initiated by women. So women are really unhappy because they're seeking, you know, a change of some sort.
Right.
And we have to find a way to change without necessarily cutting our noses off our faces.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also besides the argument of tradition, which is definitely losing its shine, the loudest, most meaningful argument for the importance of marriage is really the research that indicates that children raised in stable two-parent homes fare better in their personal well-being, their emotional stability, even their cognitive development, not only in childhood but through adulthood, than the children whose parents are divorced or together, or even if they remarry and are cohabitating with others or single parents. And I think, and also just obviously the positive marital effect that we see is strongest when you have two happily married parents. And research also says happily married biological parents at that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we look at the statistics and 63% of black families are maintained by single parents, which is more than twice that of white families, yet we only make up 12% of the population, definitely there's something going on there. You know, although marriage might be great for children, it's not actually happening for us at the rates that would, you know, make us able to say, well, we are providing this stability for our children. And I think one of the things that we hear often is, I hear this from black women a lot, is it's really hard to find a husband. Now, on the flip side of this, some people have raised the question, if it's so easy for us to find men to make babies with and to live with, why is it so hard for us to find husbands?
Well, another little wrinkle to that is single women among African Americans have more children than married women. The typical married African American woman has one or none.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, the single woman, who I would presume is having has to struggle more,
mm-hmm.
has more than one or two children.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been stumped by that statistic. In addition, I think that in many cases, choosing a boyfriend is different from choosing a husband.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of pregnancies, even when you're married, are accidental. You didn't necessarily think you were going to get pregnant that time.
Right.
So, you know, there's the element of chance that comes into that, too. There's not always that deliberate decision,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of happens to you or catches you unaware.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. There are a couple of scholars and writers who have dealt with this or explored this issue of why it's so common for Black men and women to skip going to the altar but do everything else. And, you know, even among couples who are well-educated and have a lot to offer each other and children. And I know one author, I don't know if you've heard of her, Marianne Reed. She actually is the founder of the initiative Marry Your Baby Daddy Day.
Oh, yes, I've heard of her.
The first annual one was September 29, 2005, so I guess that means there's probably something else coming up next month. I'll keep my eyes open. But she did interviews with hundreds of cohabitating but unmarried Black couples with children who were a range across the economic spectrum. And her findings, the way she summed them up, was that they're just the motivation from peers and from family to get married is simply not there.
Mm.
And also among the couples themselves. And also the stigma about having a child out of wedlock is also not there. And that combination has sort of led to this marriage inertia. And, you know, and she says that when she actually started her initiative, Marry Your Baby Daddy Day, that most of the responses she got were actually from men and that they were really interested in getting married and that they just didn't have a lot of encouragement to get married. So I was wondering, what did you think about that?
Well, I think traditionally we have thought it's always the woman who's dying to get married and the men who are reluctant to be lassoed into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in many cases with younger men in their early 20s, that is the case.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do think men come to realize that there are many benefits to them if they are married.
Mm-hmm.
And they recognize, I remember once in college, a man told me that he felt that a man who wasn't married wasn't much of a man, or
mm-hmm.
he didn't amount to much. He didn't achieve much in his life. He needed to be married.
It was like a marker of manhood.
Yes, yes. And I think men maybe aren't always able to articulate that, but they do feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times they want to get married. But again, you have the women who have established a life for themselves,
mm-hmm.
and they're reluctant to lose themselves, to give up some of their independence, and to make the modifications that they rightly anticipate they'll have to do once they become someone's wife.
Well, and also what's interesting is in looking at this issue of cultural value of marriage, researchers have said that there is a steep cultural value placed by whites on marriage as an institution used to increase the chances for their children to achieve. And one researcher, Kay Himowitz, she calls this idea the mission, which is the careful nurturing of a child's cognitive, emotional, and social development within the context of a married household with two parents. And the idea that this will lead to academic achievement, a great education, a fulfilling career, you know, a perfect life, and that white parents have really bought into this idea that there's a better chance of fulfilling the mission within the context of marriage, and that this actually creates a marriage imperative that is linked to them, to child rearing, and that this imperative just doesn't appear to be there for Black women to the same degree that it's there for white women.
Hmm. I think one thing that we have going for us is in the African-American community, we have very strong kinship links so that the extended family, in many cases, steps in to provide support and services to growing children
mm-hmm.
and to adults in the family constellation.
Mm-hmm.
We're not so nuclear family defined,
mm-hmm.
And that has both its advantages and its disadvantages.
Well, and also a lot of researchers are now challenging the notion that these kinship links are really exist to the degree that they might have once 40 or 50 years ago, and argue that if you look at African American children from single parent homes, when they go home after school, they're often not going home to anyone. They're not necessarily going home to their aunts or their cousins because people live further and further away from their families, or have families that have been decimated by other aspects of what actually the statistics that might have contributed to them being single parents, whether it's low education, poverty, being overwhelmed by other family members with needs, and that we're sort of deluding ourselves if we think that there's a large kinship network that's simply taking care of children in the way that they can be taken care of, perhaps in the past by a kinship network or by two married parents.
That's useful to think about, because as I've talked with more and more people about the marriage issue and what can be done and how can we stem all of the negative effects that comes from not having a strong family unit, I think, in an ugly word, we have to do more sacrificing and render more service. So I think about Osceola McCarty, who you might remember from the late 90s. She was the washerwoman in Mississippi bequeathed thousands and thousands of dollars to the University of Southern Mississippi that she had made, you know, washing clothes. All of her family had died by 1967. She was by herself. And in an article in People magazine, they asked her, well, why did you spend all your money? Why didn't you spend your money on yourself? Because she used her money to establish a scholarship. And she said, I am spending it on myself. And I think we need to have that kind of consciousness where we don't just take care of ourselves, that even though we may be single, we may be not matched up with Mr. Right or Mrs. Right, we might not have the perfect relationship, but we still have an obligation and a duty, a moral imperative, to be of service to each other. And sometimes that requires making a sacrifice. Sometimes you might stay married even though he's a knucklehead.
Right.
Because that might be the best thing for your child. Sometimes you might tell the boss no because you're going to go to your nephew's school play and risk the boss not giving you a good write-up. But,
right,
you know, that young man's development is important, so you're going to make the sacrifice.
Right, adjusting your priorities
exactly.
to be centered around your children.
Yeah.
Listeners, let's take some listener calls. Listeners, we're talking about Joy Jones' Washington Post article, Marriage is for White People. This is the Women, Body, and Soul program on 99.5 FM, WBAI, New York City. And to join the conversation on the state of marriage in the Black community, call us at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. You know, one of the other things I wanted to talk about is what would make for sustainable, healthy, long-term partnerships, what would make them more of a reality for Black folks? You know, I think we all think, oh, you know, obviously marriage should grow from a great relationship, but a complaint I hear repeatedly from people is that there are few good women or good men around to get into relationships with. Oh, wait, I think we have a caller. Do we have a caller? Okay, let's take this call. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
Hi. You know, I'm in the other room. I'm still hearing the radio, but I'm kind of out of range.
Okay.
But I still hear the delay. But it's all right. For the longest time, I was married for about 9 years, divorced, four boys, which are all grown now, and I'm remarried again, this time for 10 years, and it was like 13 years in between, and that was all through the, you know, late 80s and 90s, and I just experienced that the opportunities and the things like that as far as dating and prospects, they were very confusing, very confusing as far as the state of the consciousness of society as far as the marriage and everything. It's, that's not what it was back for my mother's time, but even in the mid-70s when I got married the first time. It's just a real marked difference now.
So people seem less interested or understanding of what marriage is about?
I think it's just so much more things in the way now.
Okay.
You know, as far as, you know, the way the employment is now, and just the way people are just so hard-pressed just to do simple things and not given a chance to think about and relax enough to give relationship a chance to grow the way they're supposed to.
Right, we're in the belly of the beast, and so taking this time out to nurture ourselves and each other might not be realistic given some of the pressures people are facing.
I'd like to ask the caller, what allowed him to get married the second time? What propelled you into that decision?
It was a combination of things, basically. Firstly, it was just being very disillusioned and just being like in a washing machine, just dating, going out. This one, you know, this one's crazy. Then she thinks you're crazy. I mean, it's not that anybody's really bad. I mean, we have to get off, especially black folks, we have to get off this thing where people are bad. Oh, that Negro is this, or that, mm-hmm. or that B-I-T-C-H, you know, like, for lack of better words, we call each other these bad names, and nobody's really bad. We're just misdirected.
Right. I mean, which is exactly the point I was about to make.
Yes, we have to get to a point where we cannot let the hustle and bustle of everything we're going through. We have to put the brakes on and say, stop. Let mm-hmm. me take this woman out. Let me forget about my job. Let me just get into what we're both feeling as human beings and just bounce things off of each other and get real positive feedback. And then we could calm down enough to really see what we're doing.
Okay, that's a great point. I want to take one more call. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, you know, one of the things that I've been married for over 40 years.
Congratulations.
And marriage is never easy. And I think people a lot of times expect things that just are not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
We have TV, romance novel, visions of what marriage is. And raising children is another thing that impacts on marriage because people don't have time for themselves. So when the honeymoon stage is over, people don't invest in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many divergences that come into play. And they never think about what it is that they need to sustain and feed and nourish that marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the wife is worried about the children. She might also be working.
Excellent point. Thank you. Thank you for your call. Joy, do you have any comments on that one?
Well, I do think she made an interesting point that when the honeymoon is over, the couple may not be invested in the relationship. I heard one person say that there were three entities, the husband, the wife, and the marriage, and each one of those entities needed to be well taken care of.
Right.
And sometimes we take care of ourselves or we pay attention to what we need,
mm-hmm.
But we don't take care of the marriage as such.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes what the marriage needs is different from what the husband or wife needs.
Okay. We have another caller. Listener, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing?
I'm great.
Hi. Great topic y'all are talking about. But in my case, when you were talking earlier about marrying up or down,
mm-hmm.
or educated or uneducated,
mm-hmm.
I'm in the class of uneducated.
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself mostly pursuing more educated women
mm-hmm.
than I would an uneducated woman.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I see frustration in that marriage if the person had a business
mm-hmm.
and there was no way that I could help them.
Right.
And at the same time, for as the marriage, I was married once 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time I married, it was 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in and both of those marriages, for the relationship of us, you know, being man and woman, it was good. You know, every marriage had it up and down.
Right.
But I could also sense the sense of if my education for as handling bills or making decisions on certain things, if it was higher, it probably would even be. It may be better. It may have been worse. I don't know. But when y'all compare the marriages like you're doing now, African Americans and white Americans,
mm-hmm.
I don't see how we can compare ourselves for as marriages or anything concerning the people who are compressing us, that right. have us in that, because if we had the same free mind of thought like they do, our whole situation may be different.
This is an excellent point. Thank you for your call. So, Joy, he raised two points, one about class conflict within marriage and the other about oppression and how oppression impacts Black people such that perhaps it's not appropriate to actually compare them
well,
to white folks.
Well, I think the comparisons to white Americans is just as a reference point. If we say that 50% of all marriages end in divorce, is interesting to see, well, how many white families break up and how many Black families break
right,
up.
Statistical reference.
Yes. And as for dating educated versus uneducated people, I have heard men and women both say that that can bring conflicts. But I've also heard, hopefully, that if each person can leave the job at work and not bring those value judgments about being educated or earning money into the relationship, that it's possible to have a tenable relationship where that isn't a source of major conflict.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's actually time for us to close. This has been a fantastic conversation.
I've enjoyed the discussion.
Listeners, I want to thank you for joining us. You're tuned into Women, Body, and Soul, 99.5 FM, WBAI in New York City. I'm your host, Natalie Tondiway, and I was talking to Joy Jones, author of the Post article, Marriages for White People. You can check her out at www.joyjonesonline.com. And listener comments and feedback are welcome. You can email me at wbsradio@mail.com. W like woman, B like body, S like soul, wbsradio@mail.com. Thanks for joining us for an hour of dialogue and discovery. Have a fabulous day.
I'm keeping my eyes on you. I bet you think I don't know nothing but singing the blues. Oh, sister, have I got news for you? I'm something. I hope you think that you're something too.
And you are tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free, community radio, WBAI, WBAI.org, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. Women, Body, and Soul with your host, Natalie Tondiway. By the way, you can only hear a program like this at WBAI. You may want to visit us online at WBAI.org and find out how you can support this commercial-free, listener-sponsored radio station. It's WBAI.org, and find out how to become a member of this radio station. Coming up next at 1 p.m. will be The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille, and at 2 p.m., Perspective with Luis Reyes Rivera.
This is Lawrence Block, and you're listening to WBAI in New York City. Listener supported and non-commercial.